pleasure to be here. I actually was quite recruited by my students and wondered why there would be an interest in bringing a German who has lived here in the United States for a number of years. But I could come up with a few points of connection. Number one, I used to travel to Oklahoma a lot, and the prevalent mixture of indigenous people and non-Americans seemed to be Cherokee Germans or German Cherokees, which I found really fascinating. I'm very, very proud of sharing this. The other point of connection is that Germany is a relatively young nation, and Germany used to consist of entities that ultimately broke down to tribes. So if you go to like some alpine area and ask the people, who are you? They would say first, I'm an Upper Bavarian. I'm from that valley, an Upper Bavarian. No political entity, no nation state, no nothing associated with it. Then they would say, I'm a Bavarian. So still, no Germany. Then they would say, Germany. And then they would say, the European Union. Yeah, other people, the more modern people, more exposed people might actually say these days, I'm a European. You find that a lot. The first answer would be the European. But if you go to these valleys, you're more likely to hear, I'm from this valley and I'm upper Bavarian. And that actually is something interesting that we might use in the discussion. It's the idea of multiple identities and how you fit yourself, you position yourself in a pre-existing or an entity that is to be founded, so to speak. So I wanted to use this just to offer a couple of visits. Visits with help, Esther-Sine Fanon, some international instruments that I've run across, sorted documents during my preparations for international law and energy and environment in this arena. And then looked to an environment federalism wrinkle in the United States. So I hope I can do this in a few minutes, so please bear with me. I'm very befriended with the Pan-American Health Association and people there, and thus the regional arm of the World Health Organization. And my friend there is actually in the unit for gender, people's health, ethnicity. Yeah. And I found some interesting statistics for the Americas. Who would have thought that more than 10% of the people who live here in this hemisphere are indigenous people? They belong, according to their statistics, to 400 different ethnic groups that are spread throughout 24 countries. And they have done, since health is the sine qua non for all of us here on this planet, they have done an interesting country survey, and I just wanted to report back from that. They have kind of sent out these inquiries with the 24 countries of the region, which is the Americas and the Caribbean. And some 19 countries of the 24 came back. And here is a summary of what they reported. Most countries claim to have at least a general legal directive as a policy framework on the indigenous people. Most countries say they are promoting the incorporation of indigenous perspectives, therapies, and medicines. Several countries say this is only part of the cake and not a real appreciable share in the pie. Most countries say, that's what they say, technical units dedicated to indigenous health affairs do exist in their ministries of health. However, most could not say that indigenous concepts of health, maybe therapies, I mean, all this kind of interesting stuff, why you have the pharmaceutical companies play in these areas. Most of these countries say that they do not incorporate those. And then also, my finding, there are very few scholarships and exchanges actually for those people from those areas to visit with what's going on a, how do I say, a polity level. If you are in a state, a province, with your government, so to speak, and the national center, so to speak. Very good. some other interesting thing with the Americas. I mean, and you mentioned the discovery doctrine on the grand scheme of things. They until like the 30s, 40s in Ecuador, your land would convey with indios conciertos. So you would actually buy an estate and several hundred Indians, as they call them, living. Yeah, not so far away. Not so far away. That's pretty much the health perspective. And I got interested in that because Shell Camisea in Peru, when they went first, the Western city people, or the Peruvian city people, they brought these diseases that wiped out a considerable share of the local. Next is international. And international has a very interesting picture. You have, after 22 years, finally the General Assembly come down with that declaration on the rights of indigenous peoples. That document received the backing of 143 member states, 11 abstained, and 4, Australia, Canada, New Zealand, and the U.S. voted against it. What is a declaration? It's relatively speaking a soft document with persuasive character. So there are all these aspirations, right, to culture, identity, language, employment, health, education, rights to maintain, strengthen the own institutions, cultures, probably the cosmovision, as they call it in, over there, this cosmovision that is relatively strange to us, but if you go to Mexico City and visit the and see the calendars, it's mind-boggling how exact they are. That's a soft instrument, backed by many, yet a few important countries escaped. Then there's the ILO Convention that is in everybody's mouth. That is a hard treaty. However, I found that only few countries like Norway, Mexico, Peru, Honduras, Denmark, the Netherlands, Ecuador, Fiji, Guatemala ratified. Yeah, but when you look to the prevailing definition that is used internationally, that's the one to visit with. In the Americas, we have not gone beyond a draft in decades. Yeah, so even a pre-decision draft has not been formally worked out before the assembly, so to speak, adopts it and makes the declaration. Last wrinkle, and that is kind of bringing people together. What I heard in the hemisphere when I traveled, be it anecdotally, is we're not meeting on equal par. We don't have anything against meeting. It's not a leave me alone type of approach, but we want to meet on par. From what I know in the U.S., now there is some meaning, and in the environment that occurs through treatment as states, TAS. That's an interesting concept that almost state-like can run with a federal program if it is willing and able to carry it forth. It receives a federal blessing, so to speak, and then they implement like an underground injection control program. And tribes, federally recognized tribes, under many environment programs, clean water, clean air, safe drinking water act, can do that, can seek this authority. And for so-called water quality standards, that has occurred. Water quality standards are very important because when you discharge into a river, like you have a pipe and you want to discharge, you need a permit. You need a permit, and that's known as the NPDES, the National Pollutant Discharge Elimination System permit. And the permit writer goes through two type of pillars. The first is the permit writer will consult with EPA's effluent limitation guidelines. Then the permit writer will develop water quality standards and water quality criteria. Compare the two and take the more stringent. Now, what streams in this water quality criterion? The water quality standards, and the tribal authorities can set those. And in Oklahoma, it's famous because many of those have sought this authority. Nobody has yet received the permit writing authority, like the NPDES itself. So it would work that the tribal authorities would develop these standards that a federal permit writer then considers. But here you have an encounter, at least. Yeah, so it's not an exercise of government type of setting. Okay, we're almost done. I found very interesting sometimes the insistence on terminology, on vernacular. Like in Bolivia, they insist being called pueblos originarios. In Peruvian legislation, you find comunidades nativas. Very interesting, and it raises emotions. That's pretty much all I have. I appreciate you listening here.
Thank you.